You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. A very good morning to you on a Friday. Mike McNamara with you. And a lot of stuff going on in the world. But I don't really want to talk about too much of it. You know what I mean? The president's getting impeached. Honestly, I have no interest in that. You know, for those of us that are old enough, remember when Nixon got impeached? That was a big deal. My opinion, this is just stupid. Just stupid political reindeer games. Right? Stupid political reindeer games. So I'm not real interested in that. And I'm certainly not interested in the theatrics that, you know, that are ongoing. But it does provide fuel to the 24/7 news cycle. And we all have to feel good about that, right? Right. So I'm interested in the baseball sign stealing thing because that thing has blown up and got ugly. Yeah. And Montana Man. Yeah, who was called out yesterday by First Sergeant Wayne in Hickory, North Carolina. Yeah, Montana Man actually knows, like, has spoken to one of the owners of the Astros. So you can see, like, the cradle of corruption, yeah, leads straight through Montana. It's not a good thing. So, anyhow, hey, very good morning to you. On a Friday, Mike McNamara with you. And I got a few emails about the whole sign-stealing thing, so I want to talk about it a little bit this morning. So what's the difference? What's a big deal? People steal signs all the time. Well, it is a big deal. Or at least let me tell you, I'll tell you how the environment that I was raised in and how they looked at it, and then you can obviously draw your own conclusions from it. And then the chef's going to join us this morning, so I'm fired up about that. He did not join us last week as I was gallivanting around the world and could not. And he was disappointed, too. He was sad. I felt bad about it because he loves coming on the program. He loves being the chef. And when he's not being the chef, man, he's just Kim, right? Exactly. Who wants to be that? Nobody, right? He's got Miss B telling him what to do because clearly he can't function without her. So he's being marched around by Sergeant B and all of that. So he's a little disappointed, and I felt bad. I felt bad. So anyhow, so he'll join us this morning, and we'll talk a little bit about food. So let me read you a couple of emails. Hey, Mac, I know you grew up in baseball. What's the big deal? Don't they always steal like this? Well, the big deal is that there's acceptable, you know, sign stealing, and there's unacceptable sign stealing. So, Yeah, not all sign stealing is the same. So, here's a little lesson in sign stealing. So, what's acceptable is what we can see from the dugout, what we can see when we're on base, and we can relay that to each other. And the way it happens is, let's just talk about second base first. So you're on second base. The way the pitcher and the catcher, you know, historically get around that is they go to, instead of just putting one finger down when there's nobody on second base. Now, there's some things the catcher is supposed to do, right? When you're a catcher and you give signals, here's a little baseball lesson for you, right? You're down in your crouch. Your glove, and all catchers are right-handed, your glove goes, you know, just forward of your left knee, right? And you put your glove down there. So the third base coach, right, it serves as an additional block to that person looking in, right? Your knees are fairly, I don't want to say they're narrow, but they're not, you know, spread wide. And you put your hand in the same place every time, and you give your signals. You will give which pitch you want. Now, this is with nobody on second base. So let's just say one is a fastball. And then you'll give a location with your hand. If you touch your left hand, your left thigh, the inside of your left thigh, that means you want, you know, the pitch on the inside part of the plate or on the left-hand side of the plate as you're facing the pitcher. And if you, you know, if you touch the if you touch your right thigh, you want the pitch on the right side of the plate. Now, you would never touch your crotch because that means that you want him to throw it right down the middle of the plate, so you don't do that. Okay? So that's sign, that's giving signs 101. So again, your knees are fairly narrow, so that way the coaches that sit down either baseline can't see. Okay, now know this. They're looking. They're looking. And if they see something unusual, and there's guys who, I mean, are Rain Man like this, they'll see it. And then what they do is they'll say, hey, look, I'll yell something, you know, that is very commonplace, right? So I'll yell your name. I'll yell your first name if it's a fastball, and I'll yell your nickname if it's a breaking pitch, okay? Because the whole thing here is timing. Now, if I can tell you that it's a breaking pitch, you know it's going to come slower, so you'll stay back a little bit more. So anyhow, so that's kind of the game that gets played. Now, how does that change? With the runner on second base, right, the runner on second base will be looking at the signs, right, because he has the same perspective as a pitcher. What the pitcher and catcher do is they'll put down a sign. It'll be the third sign and then minus one, or it'll be the third sign plus one, and the pitcher nods his head and says yes. So if I put down three and it's the sign minus one, right, it's actually two, which means you're going to throw your curveball or slider or whatever we agree that it is. Okay, so normally that suffices, you know, to throw people off. And then the pitcher can change it if he brush it, like he'll take his glove and he'll brush it on his, you know, chest like once. And that means add one to that. Okay, so the pitcher can change it. So there's all kinds of little things. Now, so that's normally a way of combating the guy in second base. Now, the guy in second base, if they're stealing signs, right, there's a whole series of things that he could do. If he puts his hands on his knees, both hands on his knees, fastball, right? Or if he puts one hand back to the base and the palms facing you, right? Fastball, okay? And so they'll say, if I've got one hand, right, and the palms turn towards you, that's a breaking pitch, right? And again, remember, the thing is timing. The thing is timing. So that's all acceptable cheating. Okay. Now, there's another thing people watch for, and you've heard, if you're paying attention to this discussion, it is pitchers tipping pitches. That means when I go, the way I go into my glove, right, the way I separate my hands, right, the way, and in particular, when you reach into your glove, if you go to grip your curveball different than your fastball, your wrist turns, okay, as you grip it. And people can see that stuff. And if they can see it, then they'll do the same thing, right? You know, come on, Mike, hit this guy, fastball, right? Come on, Mac, my nickname, right? Breaking pitch. Now, all that's acceptable. And pitchers go through, when they go through the minor leagues and they get into professional sport, you get into professional sports, you can see that, I mean, people do this for a living. There's guys who've spent 50 years doing this. And so you have to go into that glove every time the same way. You have to go into the windup the same way. That's all part of hiding your pitches. So that's all that goes on the field, right? Guys in the dugout watching, runners on base watching, and then, you know, and pitchers and catchers changing things up to make it, you know, impossible for somebody to steal your signs. So that's all acceptable within the game. Man, been going on forever. What's not acceptable and what's specifically outlawed in the bylaws of Major League Baseball is using electronic means outside of that to transmit in real time, okay, the pitches. And the more that comes out about this, the uglier and uglier and uglier it, the whole thing gets. It's amazing. And these are all guys that are supposed to be great, great, great guys. The guy who got the AJ Hinch, supposed to be a great guy. You know, he's supposed to be a great guy. And Alex Cora, right, went up to Boston, left Houston, went up to Boston. He supposedly is the mastermind and the guy who implemented this thing, along with Carlos Beltran, who just got fired yesterday by the Mets. These guys are, Beltran has this great reputation, great guys. And so after the World Series, when the Astros beat the Dodgers, you know, they were made this big deal. It's like Houston's got their pitches, man. You can see the way they're locked in on these pitches. They've got them. And they brought Beltran on, and he's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. And they were all laughing about it. You know, little did anybody know how right they were, right? Little did anybody know. So the system was, in the video room, right, they would be looking. So now there's video rooms near the bench, right, down in the clubhouse. There's a coach sitting in there for in case, say, you know, there's a close play, and he tells the manager if you want to challenge it, because now baseball does that. What they did was they figured out the signs, and from there they would relay. Now, at first it started with hitting a garbage can. Sometimes it's whistling. Sometimes it's names. So people picked up on this. Now, supposedly, the story that circulated yesterday was that the Astros, in an effort to cover up all of this, they started wearing electronic devices that would somehow vibrate. And I got a number of pictures sent to me by my son, my nephews, right? And one is their right fielder being interviewed after a game. And this thing is clearly taped to his shoulder. And it looks just like some kind of little device that vibrates. And so what? One is a fastball, right? Two is a curveball, right? Three is a changeup, or however they work it out. And then the other thing that happened yesterday was there's been this story going around that in 2018, when Houston played the Yankees, a guy named Altuve, or was it this year, hits a home run off Aroldis Chapman, one of the best relief pitchers, throws 100 miles an hour in baseball in Houston to end the series. And as he's coming around third base, he's yelling at everybody at home plate, do not rip my jersey off, do not rip my jersey off. And everybody's like, what's going on? And they ask him about it in the post-game press conference. And he says, well, they did that before. My wife didn't like it. So I was telling them not to do it. Right. So when you see it, it's like, they knew people were listening, and rather than say, hey, we've got to stop doing this, right, they kept doing it. They went covert, right? They encrypted their shit. That's how greasy it is. And this is probably the biggest cheating scandal in baseball since, you know, the Shoeless Joe Jackson thing. Pete Rose betting, you know, that wasn't as bad. The steroid thing to me is interesting when you talk about baseball corruption. because there's some people with pretty big reputations in baseball history that were right, that sat in the middle of it. And I don't mean players either. Yeah. There's a manager who's in the Hall of Fame by the name of Tony La Russa. I knew him when I was a kid. He played in the minor leagues for my dad. Tony Russa, big smart guy. Big smart guy. Well, if you look at pictures of Mark McGwire, he played for Tony La Russa, as did Jose Canseco, who were both big steroid guys, in Oakland. Both of them did. And that's when their bodies started to change. Now, the problem with baseball players and getting really bulky is they can't do it. Between their daily schedule, you're at the stadium for 12 hours a day, right? You're working out. You're doing more cardio, right, between batting practice and running around in the game. You're doing too much cardio to sustain bulk. And that's why most baseball players cannot do that. All of a sudden, Mark McGwire, right, all of a sudden, he turns himself into Hercules. All of a sudden, Jose Canseco turns himself into Hercules. All of a sudden, another guy that played for Oakland, a guy named Jason Giambi, he turns himself into Hercules. Now, who's the manager of the Oakland A's? Tony La Russa. Now, McGwire then goes to play in St. Louis, and who's the manager? Tony La Russa. And La Russa, like, he just acts like, yeah, like, what? I didn't know. We're all stupid, right? The other guy, right, who I think should wear an incredible amount of blame is a guy named Don Fehr. And Don Fehr was the head of the Major League Baseball Players Union. And Fehr, what is the union supposed to do? Protect its union members, right? So if the incentive was this, you know, there's great benefits to becoming a Major League Baseball player, great benefits. And so I would tell you that, first of all, if you're on the roster for a day, you don't have to see the field. You get health care for the rest of your life, for you, not your family, for you. Health care for you for the rest of your life. You know, and I want to say if you're there for 45 days or something, like you get $300 for the rest of your life. Yeah, it's crazy. And so the incentive to get there is huge. And so what did you have guys doing in college, in the minor leagues? You know, so you've created an unsafe workplace where people are going to jeopardize their health. I saw a hearing that with parents whose kids committed suicide. And it started because they wanted to be baseball players, and they bought cheap steroids from Mexico. They didn't have access to the good stuff like Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco and stuff like that. They didn't have doctors administering that stuff. They did it themselves. Kid went to USC, killed himself. Parents said, look, his behavior got crazy after he started taking steroids. And so Don Fehr, the union guy, who's now the head, I think, of the National Hockey Association Players Association, the NHL, the National Hockey League Players Association, the NHLPA. I mean, to me, what, you don't see that? A guy who hit 12 home runs, Brady Anderson in Boston, went to Baltimore and hit 52? What just happened? We all get stupid all of a sudden? And so, to me, you know, I think three great cheating scandals in baseball. The Black Sox scandal, which is, if you're not familiar with it, they conspired to throw the World Series, and they did. And then you had the steroid thing, which is still, you know, why people didn't act, why the players didn't act, and why they didn't look around and say, hey, look, the majority of us aren't doing this stuff. We need to get it out of here. Because it's happening more and more, and it ain't right. And it's not, it wasn't, but they didn't do anything. And now this thing, and this thing's pretty gross. And so it's really interesting. It'll be interesting to see where it goes and who else gets touched by it. But yeah, the latest, if you look, you'll find pictures of Astro players with electronic devices, you know, taped to their skin. In interviews on the field. And so, and then you have other players in Major League Baseball, a guy named Trevor Bauer tweeting, yep, I've heard that from a number of people, that that's how they did it. They stopped yelling. They stopped banging on garbage cans. And it was done electronically. So pretty interesting stuff. But anyway, that part of my life here on a Friday. And what else over the last 24 hours? I starting to do some work, some preliminary work to go to Las Vegas and do post-traumatic winning with the Las Vegas Fire Department, trying to connect with a guy named Aaron Rupp, who's really interested in post-traumatic winning and whatnot. Post-traumatic winning, too, is evolving. Had an interesting conversation with Gerald Furness. He's been doing some work on the counseling side of it, and as have I. I believe that's the next module that should happen when I go do this. There should be a session with leaders that talk about, hey, look, let me just give you, you know, this is the knowledge that everybody should have, okay? But the thing leaders need is how to be really good at counseling, okay? Do you understand that counseling and supervision, those are your primary tasks? Is that how you see your life? And if you did, right, I think you'd work harder at becoming a better counselor, and I think you'd stop this whole craziness of not having formations, because you can't supervise that which you do not see. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's where post-traumatic winning needs to go for leaders, right? Because that is the implementation of it. And, you know, the suicide attempts in second division, I mean, incredible, down. And I don't know, as you look at the metrics of suicide, right, I think the trend line for suicide attempts is the most important. Because whether somebody actually succeeds or not, yes, that's obviously incredibly significant. You know, but it's the attempt number, I think, that you really want to focus on. Because if you can continue to drive that down, you can continue to, you want two things. You want the ideation number to be going up. So people will tell you that, yeah, I've thought about it. And they're talking about it. So that's a good thing. And then you want the, you know, obviously attempts down. And then certainly those people who actually take their own lives, you want that number to be driven down. So, I mean, and I believe, again, after doing this, it's possible. And the first piece is education, showing everybody that there is a path to a better place. And it's a well-worn path. A lot of people have walked that path. We don't tend to talk about it because we don't tend to educate about this stuff, right? We focus on endurance, right? We focus on endurance, which I think is wrong. So, yeah, interesting. That's on my radar. The heater in my house doesn't work very well. That's on my radar. Yeah, hopefully a heating guy's coming out tomorrow, and that'll get fixed. And then what else? My recovery. Post-holiday, post-trip continues, yeah. And go get a hair. Go down to San Clemente tomorrow, get a haircut. Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if I'll swing by and see Napa Man. It depends how my time allocation is tomorrow. But Napa Man, he lives in San Clemente, so maybe swing by and see him. So a good morning to you. I want to talk a bit. There's a story that says 11 troops were evacuated from Iraq or treated for injuries. Well, they were treated for concussions. Okay. So again, the headline does not, you know, tell the truth. So something exploded and they complained of concussion symptoms. Now, how close did it explode to them? I have yet to see pictures of the destruction on our bases, right, that would indicate to me that the Iranians were serious about killing Americans. I've yet to see that. Until I see that, one can only conclude. Now, and if they didn't hit us the first time, that was it? That was it? There was no subsequent response to that when they didn't spill American blood the first time. And I think therein, that's the most indicative action, is that, yeah, they didn't take any subsequent action. Therefore, that was the action they deliberately sought to take. So, So that story's in the news. I'll read you some of the details about that. So a very good Friday morning to you here. The second Friday of the new year, maybe the third, because it is the 17th, right? So that would kind of indicate that it might be the third Friday. But of the new year, 2020, the United States, actually Whitney Houston, it's Friday, right? Makes it official. Good morning to you. I promise she does. This is dedicated to a sound engineer who helped me a little bit yesterday. Yeah. So Jim Offerdahl up in Fawston, Minnesota, helped me out a little bit yesterday. So my thanks to Jim, and this dedicated to him.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time for us to check the weather, which is our custom. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got to check shithole weather. Yeah, just about everybody participated this morning, which is good. I always notice when somebody doesn't participate. All right, currently it is sunny and 35 in Quantico. Yeah, that frigid weather, that cold air mass that was over Saskatchewan and North Dakota has moved east. And Saskatchewan and North Dakota, the chef was telling me how cold it was up there. I said, yeah, but it keeps the riffraff out. And he said, shut up with that stuff. Anyhow, yeah, I laugh. Currently sunny and 35 in Quantico. Yeah. It is sunny and 44 down at Camp Lejeune, Cherry Point, New River, where I was at last a week ago today, as a matter of fact. So cold there. They were in the almost 70s yesterday. Cloudy and 46 out at 29 Palms. Cloudy and 51 at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii, where Chris Cox, our friend from Massachusetts, yeah, where he's bombing around. He sent me some pictures from Hawaii yesterday. Going and checking out where the 4th Marine Division trained before getting on ships and going to Iwo Jima. Yeah, so plaques there and whatnot. Very peaceful now, but was not, 75 years ago. Currently in Okinawa, one of the places that Marines fought. Dark, cloudy, and 60 degrees. In the Helmand Province, in the provincial capital of Lashkarga, it is dark, cloudy, and 37, so cold in Afghanistan. And in the Al Anbar Province, which was the scene of some of U.S. forces being injured, concussed, if you will, dark, cloudy, and 58 degrees early in the evening in Ramadi. So whatever you do, do not touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Peyton Davis here on a Friday morning, and you know, it's kind of like the first I've been going since like before Christmas, right, or at least around Christmas, when my family all got together, and then I flew out the day my son, my oldest son, and his family flew out. So this weekend, first time. A little bit of downtime. Anyway, I forgot to do shithole weather. Yeah. So, I'm going to have to take care of that. So, without further ado, shithole weather. The first sergeant's mobile in Hickory, North Carolina. So he's expeditionary too. Nobody's where they're supposed to be. Cox is not in Massachusetts. He's in Hawaii. First Sergeant's not in Hickory. He's in Charlotte. 40 and sunny with winds out of the northeast at 12. Overnight low of 32. Today's agenda is the lovely VA update. Yesterday's movie with Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, sucked big time. So the First Sergeant's going to the VA outpatient clinic in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good luck to your ass. Yeah, from Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. Good morning, Mac, from Churchbridge, where the temperature is 11 degrees warmer than on Tuesday. Currently overcast and 11 below. Feels like 27 below with winds out of the northeast at 9. For this afternoon, mostly cloudy. 13 miles an hour winds out of the north. Temperature's going to get to 2 degrees below zero with scattered flurries forecasted for the next 12 hours. Here's a photo from my last outing on December 17th. If I stay on this Yellowhead Highway and drive northwest for another 567 miles, I will reach Edmonton, Alberta. Let me tell you, if you've ever driven across the Transcan Highway, yeah, you go through stretches where you wave at other cars when they go the other way. Hi, how you doing? It's me. Yeah, they're not shit. Not a whole lot out there. Shithole weather. We're hunkering in. This is from East Grand Forks, Minnesota, and right across the river is my old hometown, Grand Forks, North Dakota. Current conditions as of 9:34 a.m. Central Standard Time, 14 degrees. Feels like 13 degrees below zero. Wind speed 27 miles an hour, gusting to 36 out of the south-southeast. Visibility is 3 miles and getting worse. Cloudy conditions with snow falling and blowing throughout the day. The high today, is 21. But no way. No way it will feel like that with this freaking wind blowing. Snow totals today forecast between 1 and 3 inches. Winter weather advisory for snow blowing and snow currently is in effect. In Fargo-Moorhead, multiple businesses have already closed. Most schools down there are closed all day. Whiteout conditions are already being reported in rural areas, with the number of accidents already reported as well. Yeah. Now, this is when the weather gets serious, right? And, make sure you have your cell phone charged. Make sure you have your emergency kit, right? Those space blankets that everybody else thinks are a joke. Well, not a joke when your car breaks down. Yeah, they're not. And then, make sure somebody knows when you're leaving and when you get there. So if something happens, they can come looking for it. Important stuff. From Nancy in Northwest Pennsylvania. It's a TGIF in Pleasantville. Partly sunny. Snow is sticking 3 to 5 inches more due over the weekend. 19 degrees on the way to 27. Light winds out of the north at 8. Not too much difference in Erie. Have a great weekend. And it's a beautiful little postcard day in Pleasantville. A few clouds in the sky. Very pretty. And from Vacaville, California. Big day. Good morning, Mac. Today's weather in beautiful Vacaville, California is currently 40 degrees foggy with winds at 7 out of the northeast. The expected high today is 50. Be well. Happy Friday. That is a look at the shithole weather. Oh, hold on. I forgot Chris in Hawaii. Shithole weather celebrates Aloha Friday in the island. Aloha Friday is when we welcome the weekend to the island chain. He's from Massachusetts. Like, what the hell does he know? People wear their Hawaiian shirts and look forward to a few days off. And there's some pictures here. The sign says, sharks may be present. Yeah, okay. Well, you should be careful. Take a look at the left leg of the sign. It appears to be shorter than the right leg. No, not appears. It actually is. Coincidence? Yeah, we all know what Mac learned about coincidences in Iraq. Position, Wailea, Maui, Hawaii. Dark, 73 degrees, looking for a high of 78 today. Winds at 15 to 20, partly cloudy skies. Chris from Webster out. Then he says this, things roll slowly here in Hawaii. Island time is a real thing. 9 out of 10 chances that sign is still leaning against a tree in 2021. Have a great weekend. So, that is a look at your weather here on a Friday. We'll take a look at the now again, this is why headline writers make me mad. Okay? So, they're going to feel my wrath today. Islamic State's very own Jabba the Hutt captured in Mosul. An Iraqi SWAT team this weekend captured a hefty, high-ranking Islamic State official who is pictured crammed into the bed of a police pickup truck after his arrest in Mosul. So we arrested a fat Islamic State dude, and that's news, I guess. I mean, it's better than what I thought. Related, 11 U.S. service members were flown to hospitals after Iranian missile strikes. All right, let me see if we have any pictures here. There's a hole. I see a hole in the ground. U.S. military facilities in Kuwait and Germany treated 11 service members for possible brain injuries suffered during the January. Now, again, if this brain injury turns out to be concussion, then this story's bullshit, okay? Suffered in the January 8th Iranian missile attack on the Al-Asad air base, the Central Command said on Friday. The attack was in retaliation. Quote, as a standard procedure, all personnel in the vicinity of the blast are screened for TBI, and if deemed appropriate, are transported to higher level of care, Captain Bill Urban said in a statement. Several service members were initially treated for concussion symptoms, he said. Urban did not specify which branch, right? When deemed fit for duty, the service members are expected to return to Iraq following screening. So what does that mean? Like, they got concussed by the concussion of one of these things? Again, Iran's got too many weapons. If they wanted to do us harm, they surely could have. Right? And then there's some pictures. U.S. troops clear rubble from Iraq bases days after the Iran strike. Again, from Al-Assad. Here's a picture. Soldiers and journalists inspect the rubble of a site of the Iranian bombing. Right? Bunch of nothing. So, again, call me skeptical, but I ain't buying it. I don't believe that given the accuracy of modern-day weapons that the Iranians could not hit. They didn't have any problem hitting the Saudi oil refinery. Yeah. Army cancels $45 billion Bradley replacement competition after only one bid qualified. Whoa. Whoa. Here's an interesting story. In response to alarming Air Force suicide rates, commanders focus on connecting with airmen. Jennifer Spahn, Stars and Stripes. The story is part of a special report that's ahead on what's ahead for the U.S. military as the new decade begins. See all the stories here. The numbers set off alarms as early in February. In the first 4 weeks of 2019, 11 airmen and Air Force civilians died by suicide. Air Force leaders, in a new letter, alerted commanders urging them to act now to reduce suicide, but the numbers continued to climb. By the end of September, 100 airmen. Now, mind you, only 60 airmen had taken their lives the previous year in 2018, right? By September, 100 airmen had taken their lives, surpassing last year's total of 80. Now, that 80 must be active duty and reserve, and putting the Air Force on course to set a record hardly worth celebrating, and one that mirrors a similar trend across the military. If the alarming suicide epidemic in the Air Force drives any change in 2020, it could be a grassroots effort that starts at the unit level with commanders communicating more on a personal level with their airmen. Air Force Chief of Staff David Goldfein is underscoring the approach as the Air Force turns the page on a tough year. Interesting, because I've been in contact with these guys. I'm just looking to see if there's anybody I know in this thing. And I'm looking to see mentoring and feedback forums led by command teams and supervisors are key to the effort. Conversations with airmen are included in daily routines, such as staff meetings, roll calls, physical fitness. Oh, what do you mean? Get to know them and love them? Come on, man. Is that what happened? Is that what happened? Anyway, the Air Force, Goldfein said, hasn't been able to pin down the reason for the recent suicide numbers. Quote, I don't know that we have data that tells us exactly what's causing the spike in suicides, Goldfein said. I'm not willing to accept an answer that says this is a societal problem because this is our Air Force and these are our airmen who are entrusted to our care. We're not going to take our foot off the gas until we get to zero. Interesting. It is acceptable to take your own life in our society. Now, it is not what it was when I was a kid, which nobody would do that. First of all, you're going to go to hell, right? So the only people that did that were, you know, people that clearly had lost their minds. I mean, nobody in their right mind would do that. Nobody wants to go to hell, I don't think. I mean, maybe a few people I knew, but not too many. But so the question is, you're not looking at a marginal increase that you could – that you can say, yeah, with society, you know, as they struggle with their problems, we struggle with ours. That's not, you know, what happened. You know, what happened was the Air Force has, you know, again, and what I was curious about in the article is if they showed a final number for the Air Force. I've yet to see one relative to suicide. The last number I saw was they were at 118, and that was on October 29th or something like that. So they had 2 months to go to include the holidays. And, they were two suicides away from their active component going up 100%. So anyhow, interesting story in Stars and Stripes today from USNI News. Big surface symposium. Right, this week. So you've seen a ton of stories come out about the surface Navy. The Ready Reserve ships were recently tested. All right. The U.S. Transportation Command tested the ability of the nation's maritime ready reserve force to set sail on short notice. Only about 40% of the vessels deemed ready were able to leave port. The no-notice exercise called Turbo Activation occurred in September and involved 28 vessels from the Military Sealift Command and the U.S. Department of Transportation's Maritime Administration, MARAD. The ships are located on the Atlantic, Pacific, and Gulf Coast. This was the largest such exercise since 2003, when they were actually no shit used. About 60% of the Ready Reserve Force was considered ready, and only 40% of those ships were able to steam out of port. Retired Navy Rear Admiral Mark Busby said he's the administrator of MARAD. He made those comments at the Surface Navy Association Symposium this week. Quote, "We've got challenges there," Busby said. "It's driving our thinking as to if this is workable, sustainable model for the future, the way we run the Ready Reserve Force. Age is the main reason why the response is so troubling," Busby said. The vessels used are, on average, 45 years old, and they spend a lot of time sitting idle, maintained by skeletal crews. When they're called upon to activate within 48 hours, Busby's told USNI News, the systems don't always work. "I find myself competing with Military Sealift Command for dry dock space. We both have big ships, and there are only a certain number of dry docks that can take our ships. We're both kind of fighting for space at times during the year." So, that was a big deal here in September. You know, would the Maritime Ready Reserve, which is, if you're not going to have, you know, the standing amphib Navy, you know, are they going to get more attention? And can they stand up to it? The answer to that is maybe not. Maybe not. The Marine Corps Times, and then we'll do the top five stories. An early bird, we'll take a break. The chef's going to join us as we continue. Stories in Marine Corps Times today that you might be interested. paratroopers to replace Marines at U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. We talked about that yesterday. So that's nothing new. The Pentagon not disclosing the number of soldiers that will go replace Marines there. But that going to happen. West Coast Marines, Japanese troops focused on amphibious operations as China becomes more active in the Pacific. Now, this exercise has been going on forever, okay? But, right, nobody really noticed. The Japanese would come along, come here. My buddy's in here. I love it. So, Christopher Bronzy. Yeah, he's Battle Buddy times two, Ramadi and Afghanistan. Yeah, he wanted to go to Afghanistan. He told me, he goes, Mac, I need to go to Afghanistan. I'm like, I'm a one-pump chump right now. I'm like, Bronze, you're a fucking legend, man. You're not a one-pump anything. But anyway, we used to do an exercise called Steel Night with the Japanese, and they, you know, and it came and went, and nobody paid much attention. Until the Paracel Island shit started going on. Until... Right, the East China Sea shit started going on between the Chinese and the Japanese. And then people started saying, why are the Japanese off the coast of California practicing on seizing San Clemente Island? What? So now it's a fairly high visible exercise. In the coming weeks, a Japanese amphibious force will work alongside Marines in California as part of a joint exercise to coordinate amphibious operation. The five-week exercise includes planning to seize objectives in real-world amphibious scenarios and will include advanced seamanship, amphibious reconnaissance, fire and maneuver, logistics, medical support, and fire support operations such as mortars, artillery, and close air support, according to a statement from the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit planners for the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force exercise. Quote, it is through hard yet realistic training, which embodies our universal warrior ethos, that we continually build on established relationships between partners and allies, said Colonel Christopher Bronzy, 15th MU commanding officer. Yes. Well done, Bronze. Well said. Well said. This is the 15th iteration. Grant Nusha was a big proponent of this, just so you know, right? Grant was cool before it was cool to, like, let's do amphibious shit with the Japanese. Yeah, Grant was all over it. The 15th iteration of the bilateral exercise known as Iron Fist kicks off today and involves Japanese ground self-defense forces and 2nd Amphibious Raid Deployment Regiment Amphibious Rapid Development Brigade, which is sending about 330 personnel for the exercise. So, yeah, so it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And then it talks about some of the politics that go into this. Listen to this. We won't publicly name any country, but the fact is that the Chinese Navy has frequently made incursions into the Pacific Ocean by passing through the Miyako Straits, a Japanese defense official told Japan Times in April. They're becoming increasingly active in the East China Sea over the past 5 years. The Miyako Strait is considered a strategic choke point that experts say Chinese Navy must travel to be considered a true blue water Navy in the Pacific and move beyond coastal maneuvers. So as we've talked about China, China is hemmed in, right, by a couple different American lines, right? And China's problem is Korea to the north, then Japan, right? Mainland Japan, then Okinawa. Right. And then you go further south, you have Taiwan. Then you go further south, you got the Philippines. Then you go further south and back to the west, you have Australia. So China is effectively hemmed in by free nation. And so they've been doing this dance for a while. Let's see. One more quote. The development of amphibious warfare by the Japanese brought about Japan's own assault amphibious vehicles, significantly increasing their ability to employ amphibious combat power and keep the people of Japan safe from our adversaries, said then commander of the 1st Marine Division, Robert Castelvi. So, Iron Fist getting going there. So that's going on off the West Coast right here. The let's see. Here's a headline that I hadn't seen before. And then two more headlines. One, Trump blasts top military generals as a bunch of dopes and babies, according to a new book. President Donald Trump blasted top military officials as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies for lack of success in recent wars during a tense meeting early in his presidency that set a negative tone for his relationship with the Pentagon, according to a new book excerpt released on Friday. The book, A Very Stable Genius, Donald J. Trump's Testing of America, written by a pair of Washington Post reporters, chronicles the first 3 years of Trump's presidency, offering interviews with insiders about high administration discussions, the authors say, have not been made public before. That includes a meeting at the Pentagon in the summer of 2017, 6 months into Trump's presidency, where key Pentagon leaders and other top administration officials, including Jim Mattis, Rex Tillerson, Gary Cohn, Director of the National Economic Council, all of whom have since stepped down from their posts, met with Trump to discuss U.S. alliances and military postures overseas. The essence of the meeting has been chronicled before, but sources interviewed for the book say the meeting quickly developed into an angry rant by Trump, who accused top military officials of incompetence. He called the Afghan war a loser war and told generals assembled there, you don't know how to win anymore. He attacked the group for the cost of the ongoing military operations overseas, said the United States should have gotten payments in oil from allies it assisted in the Middle East. Quote, I wouldn't go to war with you people, the book quotes Trump as saying to military officials. You're a bunch of dopes and babies. According to the authors, Tillerson defended the military leaders and told Trump his criticism was totally wrong, which added to the ongoing rift between he and Tillerson. Mattis, a former Marine Corps general who still remains popular among military members, stepped down from his cabinet post 9 months later, citing differences with Trump over support of foreign allies. Reached by Military Times, Mattis declined comment on the new book. Who wrote it? Doesn't say. Wonder who wrote it. All right. Last story. Training for Saudi military students in the U.S. could resume soon. Now, that, mind you, 21 of them were sent home? The Pentagon had stopped all flight and field training for approximately 850 Saudi students amid fears that others may have known or been involved with the shooting at Naval Air Station Pensacola. Classroom training continued. 21 were sent home as the U.S. completed security screenings for all the students. Pending that, flight training could resume. So that's going on. And then, let's see, top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a break. We'll get the chef on here. Yeah. So stand by. Take it easy. Top five stories. Number one, 11 U.S. troops were injured in the January 8th Iran missile strike. Were concussed. Are being seen for possible traumatic brain injuries. Now, again, how far from the impact were you? Okay, so anyway. Here's how much border wall has been built with military housing money. Right? The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has put up, survey says, 23 miles of wall. Number three, training for Saudi military students in the U.S. could resume soon. Number four, U.S. Army cancels current effort to replace a Bradley fighting vehicle. And five, paratroopers to replace Marines at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. Iranian confrontation section, which has shrunk dramatically over the course of last week. Air Force F-15E Strike Eagles arrive in Saudi Arabia. Iran's president said no limit to nuclear enrichment. And he's saying that to Europe, by the way. So we will take a break. When we come back, Kim Holmes is going to join us here. So whatever you do, do not touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.